ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hey, News Daily fans. I'm Dominique Bayens. Sam Hawley will be along in a tick, but I just wanted to let you know about my new podcast, Expanse, The Nanup 4. What would you do if someone you loved vanished and you discover the person she's been living with isn't who they said they were?
Is he, you know, a murderer or a
self-styled cult leader?
It's not knowing the emptiness, really, that just kills you.
This is the bizarre story of The Nanup 4. Binge all episodes now. Search Expanse on ABC Listen and iView.
Donald Trump is all in on it. But could we, drill baby drill, our way out of any future oil shocks? We have been mostly self-sufficient in fuel production before. So why not again? Today, Alison Reeve, energy expert from the Grattan Institute, on whether we really could reopen oil refineries across the country. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. Alison, once upon a time, not so long ago, we were mostly self-sufficient in petrol and diesel, weren't we? We had 8 refineries.
Yeah, that's right. So we built our first refinery in 1925, but most of the refineries we had were built sort of after the Second World War, largely in the 50s, and one of them in the 1960s.
Wow. Okay. And we were making 98% of all our petrol and diesel needs for a really long time. But then things really started to change, didn't they? Because in 2009, the first of a number of those refineries closed.
Yeah, so that was the Port Stanback refinery, which was in South Australia. Mm-hmm. They started refining in the early 60s. They mothballed that refinery in 2003 and closed it in 2009.
Only days before a deadline to decide what it intends to do with the landmark 239-hectare site, ExxonMobil at last cleared the air. The company says it ultimately decided on demolition.
And at the time, the owners, ExxonMobil, said that really the reason was that they were unable to compete with the large refineries in Asia.
Mm-hmm. All right, so ExxonMobil closes its refinery in South Australia permanently by 2009. And then, well, over the next decade, Alison, there was just a string of closures, wasn't there? 5 more. Shut up shop.
Australia's expanding reliance on overseas fuel is set to increase. Shell is planning to close one of Australia's oldest oil refineries at Clyde in Sydney's west.
Well, Caltex is closing its Kurnell oil refinery, leaving Sydney without a refinery for the first time in nearly 6 decades.
It's been refining fuel in Altona for 70 years, but today workers at the plant were told they were no longer needed.
This is all I've ever done. 36 years I've been in this industry, oil and gas. It's what I know. So, you know, there's not many places left.
The facility, which supplies Melbourne Airport and half of Victoria's fuel needs, is the second Australian refinery to close in 6 months.
So we went from being entirely self-sufficient to having only 2 refineries, one in Brisbane and one in Geelong. So basically, what, it just wasn't viable for all of these other refineries to stay open anymore?
Yeah, I mean, it sort of came down to 2 factors. So one was age, which meant that they were just not as efficient and not using as sophisticated technology as some of the newer refineries in Asia. And the other one was scale. So the largest of the refineries that closed, which was Kwinana, the one in WA, it was refining 138,000 barrels of oil per day. If you look at the Junko Island complex in Singapore, they refine 1.5 million barrels per day, so 10 times as much.
Wow.
Those refineries are able to just get cheaper prices and use a wider variety of oil inputs because they're so much larger.
Well, back then in 2012, the Labor government was telling people, well, don't worry, everything will be fine. Australia's fuel security will not be at risk, but
In hindsight, I suppose.
Yeah. What they said was, you know, there are reliable and mature and highly diversified international fuel supply chains, which will provide us with economic security. Mm. What they said was the key to our security is access to well-functioning markets and resilient supply chains for liquid fuels. You know, they said at the time, there's a lot of different sources where we can get fuel from, so that if one source is unavailable, then other sources can meet demand. Hindsight is a great thing. But, you know, with what they could see looking at the future from where they were at the time, that seemed like the most sensible decision.
Yeah, sure. But they could have looked to the past as well, right? Because there was a fuel crisis in the 1970s, which showed us how difficult things can actually get. Do you think the government acted properly back then? Should it have done more to save more of these refineries?
Well, they could have done that, but the thing that we're doing with our remaining refineries now is that they get production payments. They get 1 cent per litre, which initially was paid by the government, and they were also given grants to pay for upgrades so they could produce higher quality fuel. Now, we could have done that with those other refineries, but if we'd offered them all, you know, that 1 cent per litre subsidy and, you know, we wanted to say cover half of Australia's fuel with that, that'd be about $5.5 billion over a decade. And at the time that they were making that decision, that didn't look like the best use of $5.5 billion.
Yeah. All right. So the taxpayers are propping up these two remaining refineries that we have in Australia. And of course, then we saw this massive fire, didn't we, in the Geelong refinery last week. Again, it's really aging, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, refinery fires happen from time to time. I think this one just happened, I think, at a particularly bad time because of, you know, the other disruption that was taking place.
The federal government is reassuring Australians that the major fire at one of only two oil refineries in the country will not have a big impact on fuel supplies and prices.
This is an incident that obviously is regrettable, particularly given the timing in which it has occurred.
80% of diesel and jet fuel here continues under production, and 60% of petrol, with Viva working very hard to try and get that 60% back up to normal levels in the coming period.
Well, Alison, Donald Trump, he wants the United States to drill, baby, drill.
We have more liquid gold under our feet than any nation on earth. And now I fully authorize the most talented team ever assembled to go and get it. It's called Drill, Baby, Drill.
So why don't we consider now whether that might not be a bad idea for us so we can be self-sufficient again? Now, it would require us to sort of forget about the environment and greenhouse gas emissions so we can double down on drilling, right? But how would it work? We'd need to find the oil first, I presume.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the proven and probable amounts of oil reserves that we've got at the moment, and when we also throw in what we call the contingent reserves, which are the ones which aren't commercial, but we think we can get them out of the ground, you add all of those up, that's about 2 years' worth.
Right.
Of fuel. There just actually is not that much oil out there, and that is because oil is not a renewable resource and we have used up large amounts of it with those refineries that we used to have. And then we would be back relying on imported crude oil to refine. Now, sure, you know, you could go out and do a bit more exploration. You might find something, you might not. But you also need to remember that there's a very long timeline from going from exploration to actually having fuel that you can put into someone's tank.
Yeah, I was going to say scientists, they can still find more. The Queensland government has appointed three energy companies, for instance, to lead further gas and oil exploration. But what, we shouldn't hold out hope.
I wouldn't necessarily hold out hope. I mean, that sort of oil in the Taroom Trough in Queensland, people have been talking about that since the last fuel crisis, since the 1970s. As I understand it, it's very deep underground. It would depend on what quality that was of oil as well. So the two refineries that we've got at the moment run on imported, mostly on imported crude. They need a particular quality of oil. Now, if you found oil in Taroom that couldn't be refined in our existing refineries, we would have to send it overseas in order to refine it, or we would have to build a new refinery here. But if you are going to have a refinery, you want to be sure you've got about 40 years worth of oil to exploit. And so if there's not 40 years worth of oil there, you would end up sending that oil overseas.
Well, Alison, there are, of course, a few alternatives to more refineries. One is that we have a really good stockpile on hand. The International Energy Agency says that, as a member, we really should have at least 90 days.
So there's actually two stockpiles, and it's important to distinguish between two of them. So there's the International Energy Agency stockpile, which you were just talking about. Now, what that asks people to do is to hold an amount that is equivalent of 90 days of our average daily net imports. And that oil is not necessarily for us to use. The purpose of it is so that all of the countries that are members of the IEA can participate in a coordinated release of stocks in response to major disruptions. So that was done around Hurricane Katrina, for example. Mm. It was done around the Russian invasion of Ukraine. There's another stockpile, which is the one that the government often talks about and gives us an update on every week. And this requires all of the refineries and all of the fuel import terminals to hold between 24 and 30 days worth of fuel in storage. Now, there is a cost to that stock holding, estimated to be about 0.15 cents per litre of fuel. And we have all been paying that on every single litre of fuel that we've consumed since 2023. If we wanted to make that stock holding requirement larger, there would be a cost for that.
And that cost, again, would be passed on to the taxpayer.
Yeah, that's right.
Of course, Alison, the other alternative to this drill, baby, drill idea is renewables, and that's the path that we are already on. But that won't necessarily protect us from future oil shocks, will it?
There's actually sort of two things here. So one is switching to renewable fuels. So this is, for example, making diesel out of sugarcane trash or, you know, wastewater or whatever, like other sort of renewable sources that we have. And then there's also the electrification pathway, which is like basically buying yourself an electric car or using electricity for some of the off-road things we use diesel for. The disruption, I think, changes a little bit because Australia is an economy that trades with people. If we want to buy electric cars, those are manufactured overseas. The ships that bring them here use oil-based fuel. So we could expect that those would be, you know, a little bit disrupted in terms of how many cars we can bring in, how quickly. The thing is, though, that the cars we already have in the country, once the electric car is in the country, it starts saving you fuel and no one can disrupt that. Really what you're doing is you're trading a supply chain that gets disrupted very frequently and very quickly when it happens for one that has a little bit more flex and buffer in it because it doesn't actually stop you from doing things. It just changes the pace of how you change.
Although it's not particularly a fair playing field, of course, when it comes to EVs. We can see that at the moment. Some people can have them, some people can afford them, but many, many people can't.
Yeah, like they are more expensive for some buyers at the moment. Those prices are coming down, you know, all the time, though. And the other thing that we are starting to see is a second-hand market building up, which that really helps for affordability.
All right. Well, Alison, the current fuel crisis really highlights what a precarious position we're in. We really do rely on other nations to do the right thing by us to continue to trade. But is the answer to all of that drill, baby, drill, or are we on the better path in your view, which is, of course, electrification?
Look, I think the way to think about this is to be clear about what we actually want, right? We don't actually want petrol. What we want is to be able to drive around easily and cheaply without having to worry about it, right? And so we need to evaluate the problem on the basis of what is the cheapest and easiest and most secure way to get that service. So that means actually what we need to look at is going, well, what does it cost us as a country to get that from petrol? What does it cost us to get that in another way? There's some estimates I've seen around, for example, that says the EVs that we've already got have saved us 1.3 days worth of fuel demand. What that means is, you know, for each EV that we get on the road, that stock holding requirement that we've got stretches further for the people who don't have an EV. Australia's always been a very open country trade-wise, I think, and there's no point cutting ourselves off from other countries, because generally what that means in all sorts of areas is that we end up with poorer quality products and services and we pay more money for them. There's no world in which we stop trading. It's just we need to be a little bit more thoughtful about exactly what do we want to trade. And also, how much do we want to pay for insurance against trade disruption? You decide what's affordable and then you run the risk on the rest.
Alison Reeve is the Energy and Climate Change Program Director at the Grattan Institute. This episode was produced by Sydney Peed. Audio production by Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sam Hawley. To get in touch with the team, email us on ABC News Daily at abc.net.au. Thanks for listening.